Bolster number two, compassion, the wisdom of the heart. Our sorrows and wounds are healed only when we touch them with compassion. Jack Kornfield. My husband has a dear friend named Frank, who's one of the funniest people we know. He's great with off-the-cuff humor and also what we call his bits. He does these great comedic bits. One night, he'd performed at a comedy club, and after he'd finished, as he was walking back to his car, he started giving himself a hard time about his set. He said his mind was reeling with thoughts. "Why did you start off with that joke? That was such a bad idea. That joke belongs near the end of the set. And why didn't you hit that punchline? It all felt flat. What's wrong with you? Why do you even bother if you can't get it right? Now you're just going to go home and eat a quart of ice cream and watch TV until 3 a.m. and feel miserable," and so on and so on and so on. In the middle of this self-inflicted diatribe, Frank suddenly heard a little voice inside of himself say, "Hey, leave him alone." Those four words stopped him in his tracks. In that moment, Frank realized that these harsh, critical thoughts and worry about his performance were feeding his fear of failure and causing a great deal of stress. He felt his heart beating faster, his jaw clenching, and his palms getting sweaty. The more he listened to his thoughts, the angrier he grew, until that little voice inside of him told him to knock it off. The truth is, we will probably never speak to anyone more in our lives than we speak to ourselves. And the simple act of being kinder and gentler with ourselves helps to relieve stress. Frank's moment of awareness here illustrates one of the most essential practices in all of yoga, and we call it ahimsa, which translates to nonviolence. Nonviolence in the way we treat others, but also in the way we treat ourselves. It's the practice of kindness and compassion. If we think about some of the most prominent and respected leaders in the world, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, to name a few, their work, their movements were all driven by the concept of nonviolence and compassion. They all stood up for the truth in a nonviolent way. "Ahimsa is the strongest force known," said Mahatma Gandhi, who helped free a nation using this practice of nonviolence. So we start where we are, with ourselves, and we do it with a sense of nonviolence or compassion. Wherever we are, we can begin to look at ourselves in a kinder way. With practice, we develop an awareness of the storms of self-criticism and learn how to take a pause before getting into the depths of those unhelpful, habitual thinking patterns. I worked with a wonderful man years ago named Bob. He also had a great sense of humor, except when it came to himself. He too gave himself a very hard time a lot of the time. One day, he said he finally understood the power of the inner critic and told me the following story. "I've had enough," he said. "This morning, I went out to do some errands, and I was driving down Sunset Boulevard in my Prius, and it started up. My thoughts telling me I wasn't doing this right or that right, that I was behind on this or that, why can't I get it together, what's wrong with me, on and on and on it went." Then he looked up at me and said, "It's like there's a committee in my head constantly criticizing me." I finally pulled the car over and asked them to get out of my car. I kicked the committee out of the back seat of my car, he said. We both burst into laughter, of course. It was genius. He actually physically pulled his car over to the side of the road and told his inner critics enough was enough. From that point on, we referred to those thoughts as the committee. After that, once in a while, when I'd come for a session, he'd say, "Well, the committee was trying to hold a meeting with me today. They were very persistent for a while, but I finally refused to see them and got into reading a really good book instead." He now had an awareness that he was not his thoughts, and that he could make a conscious choice whenever they started up to take away their power and do something else, something he enjoyed, something that made him feel good. In these aha moments, both Frank and Bob learned that there's another part of themselves. In meditation, we call it a higher consciousness or an observer. It provides us with an instinct to take care of ourselves. By practicing compassion with ourselves, we begin to change our relationship with stress. By learning not to battle with ourselves constantly, inner tension can begin to soften. We loosen our grip, mind, body, and soul. We can begin to accept that we're not here to be perfect. We're here to be human. Mikhail Baryshnikov, one of the greatest ballet dancers of all time, said this of his art. "My jump is not high enough. My turns aren't perfect. I can't get my leg behind my ear." Sometimes there's an obsession with technique that can kill your best impulses. But communicating with an art form means being vulnerable, being imperfect. And most of the time, this is much more interesting. Trust me. So, striving for perfection can manifest into feelings of anger, resentment, bitterness, anxiety, and sadness. Our words, thoughts, and actions can all be affected by this. That's why it's so healthy and helpful that Ruth was able to laugh at her husband's observation about her perfectionism. "Nobody tries harder than Ruth, nobody," eventually became a source of amusement for her. Our practice of compassion helps us to find a greater sense of gentleness and kindness for ourselves and others. I love this piece by yoga teacher Dorna Janab. We often read it aloud for the very first class of my Gentle Yoga for Wellness series at Cedars-Sinai. It goes like this. Thoughts of guilt, shame, resentment, disappointment all have a seed of violence within them. Words like should and must are the same. When we are unable to forgive ourselves or someone else, when we carry resentment, when we expect far too much of ourselves and put the responsibility of the whole world on our shoulders, when we expect the whole world to run according to our liking, we are being violent towards ourselves and the rest of the world. When we don't act according to our truth but out of our fears, we're being violent towards ourselves. Have the intention to practice nonviolence in your mind. Watch and become aware of your thoughts and see if there are any that contain seeds of violence toward you or another. Once you've become aware, you won't need to push it away. Just recognize it. Watch it come to your awareness and watch it leave. Thoughts come and go. It's by holding on to them and repeating them over and over that they become the source of our violent actions, our violent words. If you just observe them without reacting to them, you'll see that they will leave your awareness as easily as they came. I think that's so beautifully put. We can watch our thoughts come and go. We breathe and observe them. This gives us time to pause, and in that pause, we have a chance to feel and respond to what is actually happening right now. When we know where we actually are, we can respond more clearly to what to do next. Observe during the day how you speak to yourself, or if you give yourself a hard time, if you should yourself, should've, would've, could've yourself. As you begin to develop the awareness of how you treat yourself, you'll begin to recognize that it's unhelpful to be so unkind. Our bodies tense up, our minds begin to tell us that we're unworthy of this or that, and sometimes we even get into obsessive habitual thinking patterns that only make us feel worried or angry. Observing our thoughts and choosing to develop a deeper sense of kindness and compassion helps to soften our inner tension. How can we begin to work with outer stressors if we're constantly giving ourselves a hard time? As we've touched on, there will always be stressors in our lives, big and small. There's always an ebb and flow. No one leads a perfectly stress-free life. Some stresses are actually healthy, like trying something new or trying to overcome a particular fear or planning an event that you're looking forward to or getting ready for a vacation. Exercise is a good stressor that makes us more flexible and strong. Many students have told me that with time, a cancer diagnosis has a way of allowing them to see the big picture more clearly, that things that used to cause them a lot of stress become unimportant and no longer faze them. And this inspires and empowers them to live life more on their own terms. There's one point I'd like to cover that students tell me they come up against sometimes and need a way to put into perspective, one particular and very understandable stressor. It usually starts out with a well-meaning friend or family member who brings up Aunt Emily's or Uncle Jack's experience with cancer. And unfortunately, it might not be a helpful story or a positive insight in that moment. It might not be very encouraging at all. And it's natural to take it to heart. It's human nature to compare our stories with others. The truth is, we are all on our own paths. Everyone reacts in their own way and in their own time to treatment. There are so many variables. Our genes, our upbringing, the different types of medication. No two people have the exact same experience. It's important to know that remarks from family and friends during this time, although well-intentioned, might not always feel helpful. And it's important to know that these sometimes insensitive remarks are not your story. Period. Full stop. So how do we get through those moments? Through an understanding of where they are coming from. People draw and speak from their own experiences and feelings. All speaking is self-referential. If someone had a great time on their trip to Spain, chances are that Spain is a wonderful vacation destination in their book, and they will recommend it to everyone. But if they had a lousy time in Spain, maybe the weather was crummy and the hotel wasn't all it was cracked up to be, maybe the tour bus broke down or they had a bout of food poisoning, upon returning, they'll spread the word that they would never travel to Spain again, and if you're smart, you won't either. Anaïs Nin, an acclaimed French-Cuban novelist, said, "We don't see things as they are. We see them as we are." Our personal experiences of places, events, and people color our opinions and the stories we share with one another, even when it comes to cancer. All speaking is self-referential. Everyone is sharing their own experiences, opinions, guidance, and support through their own individual lens. It's not your story. They are telling their stories through their perceptions and opinions with their feelings about the given situation. It's their story. And whether their remarks are well-intentioned, but unhelpful, or just plain tone-deaf, this is another moment to practice compassion for yourself and for them. They might not have the right words and are trying to be supportive, or they might just be ignorant about what's going on and don't know what to say. Consider this. If you are willing to look at another person's behavior toward you as a reflection of the state of their relationship with themselves, rather than a statement about you and your value as a person, then you will, over a period of time, cease to react at all. Yogi Bhajan. When we feel ourselves tightening up due to someone else's stories, remarks, or behavior, we can practice compassion for ourselves by not taking on anyone else's stuff. It's not ours. We can take a few breaths and practice pausing. We can observe others just like we observe the sensations in our bodies and our breath. I know I'm breathing in. I know I'm breathing out. We can feel our feet on the ground and bring our awareness back to now, knowing that their stuff is not our stuff. Healing is not always easy or comfortable, but when we begin to practice compassion, we start to change the way we look at the world, and our inner tension begins to soften. That brings us to the concept of healing. Healing and curing are not the same. Doctors, treatments, and the work of researchers and scientists do the treating and the curing. Healing is different. Healing is about supporting ourselves along the way, a salve for the mind, heart, and soul. Healing is a process that affects the whole person, and that's what we're doing here, finding ways to help us feel better along the way. So, to recap, Start where you are with a deep sense of compassion. We'll practice these concepts in our bridge exercises that follow. This short piece explains it so beautifully. It's called Unconditional Love by Courtney A. Walsh. Here goes. Dear human, you've got it all wrong. You didn't come here to master unconditional love. That is where you came from and where you'll return. You came here to learn personal love, universal love, messy love, sweaty love, crazy love, broken love, whole love infused with divinity, lived through the grace of stumbling, demonstrated through the beauty of messing up, often. You didn't come here to be perfect. You already are. You came here to be gorgeously human, flawed and fabulous, and then to rise again into remembering. But unconditional love? Stop telling that story. Love, in truth, doesn't need any other adjectives. It doesn't require modifiers. It doesn't require the condition of perfection. It only asks that you show up and do your best, that you stay present and feel fully, that you shine and fly and laugh and cry and hurt and heal and fall and get back up and play and work and live and die as you. It's enough. It's plenty.